wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
Down in the new basement studios by the lake, we have a quite a heavily sports-themed show.
I think it's almost entirely sports.
Yes, but it's not going to be sports takes. Yeah, we don't do that. That's not who we are.
Yeah.
We're not going to sit here and go, wow, they've got to get rid of so-and-so and play such-and-such, unless either one of us digresses.
There might be a little bit of that, but you know, mostly that, but cultural.
Yeah. Thing. Yeah. So if sports is not your thing, do not reach for the dial, because you will learn something about life.
All right. Wow.
Okay. Before we get started, I want to give a shout out to a fellow podcaster I know in the world of podcasting. You're always supposed to support each other.
Podcasting convention you went to.
Yeah, right. So
some of those exist, right?
I'm on LinkedIn, and I know we're going to have a quick discussion about social media in a moment. I don't do social media per se, but I'm on LinkedIn.
Right.
Anyway, so if you're on LinkedIn, it's one of these like sort of professional networking sites. And to be fair, I don't put my picture up there. I have the Atlantic Voices logo up there, and it says who I am, but it has my name, Zeph, and it has podcaster, and it lists all the Atlantic Voice and those things, and then also lists my sort of regular job, because obviously podcasting is not paying the bills for either you or I.
No.
Anyway, on LinkedIn, I got a warning this week that one of my connections had an anniversary.
A warning.
Well, then you get told, it's like, hey, yeah. You get basically an email going, hey, one of your connections is celebrating an anniversary, you know, congratulate them. I don't do that because I don't do social media, but I click on anyway to see who it is, and it is an old friend of mine, and I'm like, oh, you know, I hadn't spoken to her for years. I clicked on, and I saw that her podcast was now 3 years old, or 2 years old, and I clicked on.
A mere babe in the podcasting world compared to us.
And I clicked on, and so I want to give a shout out to my old friend, Rachel Stewart, who has a podcast called Pieces of Grit. Now, she lives in San Diego with her husband. I think they've got a family and everything. Mm-hmm. Her podcast, and it's interesting. I went to the website, and you know, I did a little online stalking because I was like, ooh, someone I know is a podcaster too. And I was both excited and deeply envious all at the same time. So she has a podcast. Her podcast is about 20, 25 minutes. She interviews people, and it is very much about, you know, self-help is the wrong word, but helping people, you know, with their lives and careers, and it sort of has this sort of thing. And it's called Pieces of Grit, and she is on a fortnightly schedule, as we tend to be, so every other week.
I'm Googling her as we speak, or the podcast, rather.
So anyway, I listened to a couple of her podcasts. They also did one where they did the Myers-Briggs test themselves. But anyway, it's serious. It's not like ours, where we're just mucking about to extent. But I will say this. I then clicked on her website. And her website, where she hosts her podcast, Pieces of Grit, it's available on iTunes and Spotify and all the normal places.
PiecesofGrit.com.
Yeah. Their website, she's got a great fashion shot of herself, like glamour shots and everything. And so I messaged her.
Actually, it's more than a podcast, right? Because I'm looking at the
blog.
Website. Yeah, it's a whole website, and it only has a section that's podcast, so.
Yeah, anyway. I think that's what drives
you. Dig deep, aim high.
Yeah. So anyway.
Yeah, she's photographs better than we do.
Oh, yeah, and that's what I'm saying. And then I sort of said, so I messaged her. I hadn't spoken to her a couple of years, and I messaged her saying, hey, I've been podcasting for years, myself and my buddy, and, you know, a podcast discussion. And then I'm, like, sending her my links, and then at a certain moment I'm thinking, ooh, our website is a hand-drawn logo, and yet her website is fashion shots and glamour shots and clearly very professionally done. And at the moment I'm thinking, yeah, forget you all. So...
Well, so listen, anyway, our website could probably use a little more attention. I don't pay any attention to it. But the logo, while I originally was, and it took some effort. You remember, like, you had that hand-drawn.
Yeah, we do need to have that redone up.
Right. So, well, I had to, in order to, this is one of my few technical parts of working on the podcast, is I took it because it was drawn. When you scan it in, everything is multiple shades. But really, when it reproduces online for a logo, you don't really want 14 different shades of blue that are showing how the thing, it looks like a scan, right?
Yeah.
So I went in and you can do different things to simplify the colors. So I just brought it back to the four colors, black, yellow, red, and blue. There's a little bit of yellow and white, of course. But I had to like go in and pixel by pixel change a bunch of it, and I smoothed out a bunch of lines and things. And it still looks hand-drawn, but So it doesn't look very good when it's big, but I kind of now like it as a small logo because there's so many podcasts with the small logos that are – they just look like – it's now like clip art.
You know, our
like
thumbnail's quite good, isn't it?
Ours has more character to it. But,
and it looks good on remember, looks good on mugs and stuff.
Remember,
so
you
want to buy a mug,
you
had $15.
You had a gift given to you of a cornhole game, you know, with the boards and – they had taken our logo, your significant other had sent in the logo, and they, I guess they said, well, this logo is horrible. We'll just make a version ourselves.
Yes.
And it was pretty good.
It is pretty good.
And so really, somebody just needs to reach out to the people who made the cornhole and say, can you guys just send us digital file?
I did years ago, and they sent me the file, and then I couldn't open the file, and then I was kind of embarrassed to keep asking them, like, hey, can you send it to me and such, because I don't even know what I'm talking about when someone goes, JPEG, or do you want a GB file?
So and
I'm
send like, it. I can figure that part out. You can do the audio stuff. I'm pretty good with the visual
parts. I will
parts.
Hunt for it on the computer. But anyway.
Hopefully. We don't have to pay them for that, but they handed it over.
But anyway, shout out to Pieces of Grit. Very different show than ours, but please give it a listen.
Do you think she's going to give a shout out to us in return?
Well, I'm going to now message her on social media and say, hey, we gave you a 5-minute shout out at the start of our show to our many hundreds of listeners. Let us hope that in the world, because again, podcasting is all about everyone, you know, reciprocity and all that. I can only hope that the Pieces of Grit show will come back and at least give us a... Then go, if I'm going to that podcast for help with stuff, why on earth? We're not going to be able to help you.
It's really focused on women. It says passion and perseverance are the things that determine our success. Here you'll find stories of women digging in, getting to the root of who they are and making big things happen in their lives.
There you go. So if you're one of our female listeners, check it out. And if you're one of our male listeners, check it out because you need to do better as well.
It's probably true. Yeah, it's not.
So as Pieces of Grit, talking of social media.
Before we do just a brief moment on LinkedIn.
You just hammered my segue, but it's okay.
I know. Well, no, you'll be able to come back to it. But we are still inside of LinkedIn as a social media item. I have a real life LinkedIn profile. My work, there is some.
Are we
degree.
Connected on LinkedIn?
I think so.
Probably, yeah.
I mean, I'm.
You have a picture of yourself, though.
Right. Yeah. Right. I mean, from my real life work, and I've got a banner and all these things. But somewhere along the line, because of our crossover of sharing the Atlantic Voice Gmail account, something picked up. Like the contacts, you know, when you get onto LinkedIn, they can say, oh, well, let us take a look at your contacts.
That's
and
right.
You know who's on.
When
and
you're
cetera,
being hacked.
So to this day, I still get these invitations to follow people that are clearly people from your regular life. They're not even Atlantic Voice people.
Yeah.
Somehow your contacts must have gotten mixed in with the Atlantic Voice contacts, which then got mixed into mine. Like they're not on my regular type contacts, but it's often offering me to follow people or suggesting I link with people. I guess I don't really follow people.
Hence LinkedIn.
That are connected to your real life.
Okay.
And it's really annoying.
Yeah, sorry. Hey, but you're expanding your horizons.
But there you go. Here's your seg. Well, maybe you had a seg.
Well, there is I was just going to say, so social media in general can be a minefield of interpersonal relationships.
There you go.
Yeah, because one of the stories that I don't know if anyone followed this the other week, and we're not going to do this very long, but because we needed to fill 5 minutes, and somehow it's a segue from social media. I don't know. Had you followed the English Premier League and MLS star Wayne Rooney's wife? Colleen Rooney, trying to catch out his England teammate who plays for Leicester City in the EPL, Jamie Vardy's wife, Rebecca.
Mm-hmm.
She had run some quite elaborate internet scam or social media scam to prove that her good friend who followed her on Instagram was in fact selling her personal stories to the British press and making money.
That's right. Well, so for anybody, I was looking around. I had seen a little bit of it, but just briefly this morning beforehand. Yeah. I'm reacquainting myself. If you want to have a sort of a full recap, the vulture.com has a thing that sort of says, here's what you need to know.
Yes.
And for those who don't know the phrase WAG, WAG is a term used in British football for wives and girlfriends.
Yeah.
So it's a whole separate culture. We don't really have much of that here. You know, people are aware of some of the star, like baseball, football, and there's some wives that have some, but they're...
Who's Kim Kardashian with?
No,
she's with a rapper. But still, she would be... Basically, it is a celebrity...
But these people are celebrities because they're WAGs. I mean, no, but to some extent, yeah, okay. They've done some other
things. What I'm saying is, I think it is a term that you could apply, if you're not already using it, to any celebrity other half.
Right, but what I think is different...
Who is not already a celebrity themselves. I think that is your point.
In England, there's a whole culture of, like, people... And maybe it's partly the newspapers. The newspapers have more of the tabloid... Not that we don't have tabloid type of things, but they just... That's a line of culture that they follow, just like you follow the royals. Like, there's some people who are assigned to figuring out what they're doing, getting pictures of them. Look, they're just like us. They you know, didn't put their makeup on when they went to the mailbox. Or postbox.
I guess if you're familiar with page 6 of the New York Post, it is that, but blown out to 15 pages in all of the England's many tabloids.
Right. So, like, as a part of this culture, this is going on. And so what it said was, for people know how Instagram works, you can have it be private so people can only really look at your stuff if they're in your circle. Like, it's not – it doesn't – you can do it publicly or you can do it privately. I guess theirs are private. I'm somewhat surprised. Maybe they can do part public and part private. But she cut down everybody who was following her except for Rebecca Vardy, at least is what she claims.
She claims.
And so when these – and she started planting fake
stories.
This
fake
is a five-month process, which I'm just amazed that somebody who's, you know, heavily into social media can, like, detune every – and she said – you know, she made a joke about, like, oh, you know, my friends were probably wondering what was going on because it – look to them like she wasn't posting anything.
To be fair, when you are a wag, it's not like your day is filled up with going to work. You've got, because you are a celebrity wife or girlfriend, the odds are you're just spending the day mucking about. So to be fair on Colleen Rooney, she probably did have plenty of time to try and catch her so-called friend out in leaking stories.
Yeah.
So well, that's what I'm saying.
I mean, but like, so like, give you a she... She has 1.3, this is Colleen, has 1.3 million Twitter followers and 800,000 Instagram followers. So this is a person who has a social media presence that's part of, you know, what she does or her persona. Rebecca Vardy has less, 400,000, I think, Instagram followers. But in any event... So she shuts everything down, puts these stories out. The stories start showing up in The Sun, I think it was.
The Sun, which is the trashiest of
the
British tabloids. Yeah.
And so then, and then rather than do something directly, apparently, she comes out with a tweet and some, I guess, on Twitter, she comes out and says, accuses her.
Yeah,
exactly.
A lot of them calling up going, what the hell are you doing?
Which then turned into a whole thing where Rebecca was... It all became open letter season, you know, like where Rebecca now puts out a thing saying, wow, you really should have approached me directly, and I don't necessarily control my account because I have assistants and I've done other businesses. Like, apparently she was like a nightclub promoter or something like
that,
which tells you a little bit about how maybe she met Jamie Vardy. By the way, we should mention, for people who don't know who Wayne Rooney, and probably a lot of people know who Wayne Rooney, but Jamie Vardy is a star for Leicester City. A bit younger,
but he's actually still up there. He's now in his 30s.
Not a ton, but
he's played for England for about 20 times.
He's more active in the international soccer scene these days. But they're both, they're kind of rough guys, you know.
They're old fashioned working class lads who've come good, which tends to be many.
So every now and then there's a story about them, you know. A little bit of beers, a little bit of getting in trouble, little things like that. And so I think it's kind of funny with the whole...
I found it quite interesting because now, obviously, Colleen Rooney had, with the help of experts, created this strategy to catch her buddy out, or ex-buddy, I would imagine. Rebecca Vardy's first defense was, I will be employing internet experts to find out how this all happened in terms of somehow she's been scammed. There is a part of me. At first, when this first story first broke, and like everyone else, I like a bit of juicy celebrity gossip. I'm more than happy to, you know, enjoy the travails of other people. There is a part of me now, though, when you were just quoting back the number of Instagram and Twitter followers that these people have. So, you know, once you get like 8 in the 100,000s and the millions, you are attempting to be like a, what do they call it, YouTube persona,
where you're making money. I think there's possibilities to monetize that. I'm not exactly sure.
There is a part of me who thinks this is one of those feuds that have been cooked up.
Well, okay.
So, and I've stopped following it, frankly, after a week
because I've then lost interest. They've
cooked it up in order to drive their own Instagram and what's it hits and followers so they can make a bit of money on the side.
Well, here's the thing, right? I went and searched Google 2 days ago, appearing in, this is in Metro UK. I don't know what that is, publication, Metro. But it's also in The Sun. Harry Redknapp things, and you can give everybody the bio for Harry Redknapp in a second. Things Colleen Rooney and Rebecca's Vardy's feud is all for quote publicity.
Yes,
and so this all comes up because one of them is on I'm a Celebrity. It's a show it's over
one of
those, there.
Yeah, it's like a Big Brother type sort of Survivor.
And
one
he's on I'm a Celebrity.
Exactly.
And yes. So now they all are constantly getting these reality TV stuff. So now, and Harry Redknapp, I don't know, you give the bio of
Harry Redknapp is an elderly gentleman now in his 70s. He's managed many, many clubs, including Tottenham Hotspur and Portsmouth. And he's an old wide boy from North London who talks like this and working class lad who played professional soccer and then became a manager. And yeah, I'm Harry Redknapp.
Didn't he do like a 2-week stretch as England's manager or something like that before?
No, he was one of those who always spoke to his mates in the tabloids press that whenever the England job was open, to put all these Harry Redknapp would love to do the job stories. And every time the England job came open, you'd open the paper going, why isn't it our Harry? Because most of us don't realize that he's down the pub with that fella all the time hooking him up, because that's how these celebrity things all work. Here's an interesting thing about
Frank Lampard's uncle, right?
That's right, yes. Here's the interesting thing about all of this. I do think it's true that if you are a super celebrity, so I'm not talking about your George Clooney's and the Brad Pitts of the world. If you're a super celebrity, you actually want your privacy. But if you are sort of adjacent to celebritydom, because at the end of the day, these are wives and girlfriends. Mm-hmm. They're not Premier League footballers or MLS footballers or England captains themselves. At some moment, while they all want privacy, they actually want the publicity, which does lead me to believe that this is all kind of cooked up and kind of a scam.
And Colleen's husband is changing jobs coming up here because
he's going back to England.
Yeah, because so he's been finishing up with DC United. He really just did 2 years here. Apparently, his wife was very homesick and is already back to England and did not enjoy being in America. Who knows, you know, what the full depth of that story. So now he's wrapping up, and he's hasn't had the same impact on American soccer the way. Obviously you got what's his name from Sweden, Ibs, who's making Abramovich. A big deal here, and then before that, out in LA was. And way back you've got
Beckham,
and then whoever it was in between. But this would be a case of a brief foray here, and then he's going to go back and become player manager for
Derby County. Yeah, which interestingly was the prior job of Frank Lampard, who's now Chelsea manager, who is of course Harry Redknapp's nephew, and Redknapp has an opinion on.
So maybe this is all for all of them.
Well, I'm going to say this, to circle back the last mention for our friends at Pieces of Grit. I think we might take some shots at you so that you can take some shots at us and we can have a low-level podcast feud. In an attempt to boost.
The article that would come out like the Atlantic Voice's 12 Twitter followers, had got this update. All right.
So that was our Perils of Social Media story, but that was sports stars and wives of sports stars. We do have to get on with the. I'm sorry. Do you have anything else?
No, I was going to say it was sticking inside of podcasting and other sort of overlaps with things.
Sure, let's do it. Here's your segue.
And it relates to soccer now more into the actual sport. There was a podcast I've mentioned before called 99% Invisible.
Yep, mentioned that many times.
Does a lot of design stuff. It's a great podcast. One of those ones that you always wonder when they're going
to
run.
Actually,
out of
to
topics.
Be fair, can I say this? We don't know how many listeners Pieces of Grit have. We can imagine that 99 Invisible has a shed load of audience. So you know something? We're actually going to create a feud with them. So,
okay. I don't think we'd have a feud.
We are desperately attempting to boost our ratings above 350 people.
But they ran you can actually read the whole transcript and has little video clips. Like they kind of take the whole podcast if you just want to read it, and you can read almost the whole thing with little bits of videos inside of
which
it.
Which is extremely lazy, to be fair.
Why?
It's just lazy.
What do you mean? Oh, you're lazy if you read it instead of listening?
Well, it's lazy if you just transcript your podcast. Although I must say I've often tempted
it's extra. It's like two ways to consume it.
All right. Yeah. Fair enough.
I assume it's some sort of automatic thing.
You couldn't do that with ours, though.
It would be
confusing. I think a lot of the nuance would be lost.
Yeah, yeah.
Plus, it'd be awful reading.
Yeah.
Seth continually going, and let me say this.
So this one was about, we'll only touch on this briefly because anybody who doesn't care about soccer at all will really not enjoy it. But it was about the what they call the back pass rule.
Yeah.
And up until the late 80s, 89, I think.
I think it was after the 1990 World Cup.
If our younger people won't know that this was the case, that you used to be able to pass the ball back to the goalkeeper who could just stand there over it and pick it up, you know.
Because if you're not a soccer fan, the goalkeeper is the one sort of outlier in the.
He can use his hands.
He can use his. Well, no, but I mean that. And it's funny to keep this to sports because we are going to talk about baseball. You know, baseball has the pitcher who is very much sort of this very unique skill set. Even in ice hockey, the goalkeeper's on skates and he can skate around and his equipment is kind of the same other than he's got more padding. Whereas the pitcher has a very different skill set than everyone else in baseball. Mm-hmm. The goalkeeper, in a strange way, in a sport where you can't use your hands, there's one dude who can. And so he's always, when I was a kid, that was always the outlier. If you were no good at kicking the ball,
part of this
you
podcast,
got shoved in the goal.
Well, and part of this podcast, they're mentioning some various steps in the interviews, and one of the interviews is just talking about somebody who was a goalkeeper and now does coaching goalkeepers, how he can recognize a goalkeeper in any crew. Like if he sees a soccer team of kids going through an airport, he can figure out which one's the goalkeeper because he just
physically
has a different way look to him. But anyway, so nowadays, if you can't pass back to the goalkeeper and have them pick it up, they can play with their feet, but they can't pick it up.
Yeah.
And this, I had never realized, because I was in school when this rule changed, I remember, and I remember thinking, oh, they're making it harder. But as it turns out, it was because you hear all these stories about soccer just sort of stopping. And I do remember watching big games, and then, and it would just, they just sat there, you know, like they, meaning a team scores a goal, it just wants to waste the next 45 minutes. So it'll pass it back to the goalkeeper. The goalkeeper pick it up, boot it out. You know, they'll pass it like to the point where they're passing it halfway back the field. And somebody came up with this rule. And in fact, part of this podcast talks about like they think they found the person who invented the rule.
Oh, really?
Down. But they come up with a rule that says if you pass back with your feet to the goalkeeper, they can't pick it up. So they have to play it like a player.
Like they're a regular dude. Yeah.
And it chalks up the entirety of like the success of modern professional soccer to this.
Yes, and I would agree with it.
It took away that slowdown thing, and everybody had to move out from the back, which resulted in this more aggressive play, which resulted in totally possession-oriented soccer, which resulted in all the great dribblers and Messi and all these sort of folks instead of being, you know, lob it up there and try to knock it in. They mentioned at that time a lot of, particularly in English league, just big dudes playing attack, and they just, you'd hopefully lob the ball in there and they could smash it in the goal.
The biggest thing it did was it sped up the game just as a spectacle. And I'm going to equate it to, because we are going to talk baseball for the back end of the show, because the Washington Nationals, the area from which this show emanates, are in the World Series. Obviously, everyone now is tuned in to every pitch of the world of playoff baseball. Mm-hmm. I hate it when the pitcher decides to try and throw the guy out at first who might be standing around. And every time they do that, I'm like, why?
Well, the whole crowd boos.
Everyone boos because it slows down the game. And I'm like, I'm trying to remember the last time the dude got caught out. And I know that that's actually, it is a time-wasting tactic, but it is horrible from a spectator level.
Yeah, and also
but
to what keep I'm saying the person is, getting a big lead.
This was also, I equate that quite closely to passing the ball back to the goalkeeper. It was an attempt to take all the air out of the game, buy everyone some time, which is fine from a purely sports strategy.
You know what it's really just like is before there was a shot clock in college basketball.
Right, it's the same.
You used to have these games where, and this goes way back for people, and I never watched one of these games when I was that young, but they would just stand around the corners passing to each other.
Four corners,
And so North Carolina was known for doing this stuff where you have these games that would have like a ridiculously low score because they'd get a little bit ahead and they'd say, well, we're just going to sit on this. We're just going to stand around while you guys can't get us playing keep away with the ball. And then they create the shot clock so that you had to do something.
I once saw an under-14s basketball game where one coach came out in the second half and the score was something idiotic like 12-8 and decided, because they don't have a shot clock, that they were going to just sit on the ball. And the crowd must have been about 12 or 14 relatives. The noise and abuse coming out from the three rows of bleachers was quite something because it was against the spirit of the game.
It is
amazing how, you know, and these, you know, it's interesting. And I did have this thought. So obviously, I don't know, I'm sure most people in America remember from the last NFL playoffs how the New Orleans Saints were jobbed out of going to the Super Bowl by a pass interference call that was never called. So the first thing the league did in the offseason was attempt to tidy up that rule. So that is addressing a rule from the perspective of rules, which are fairness of the game. What's interesting about the back pass rule, and to your point, the shot clock rule in basketball, it has nothing to do with the game. It is all to do about the game as a spectator sport.
Right.
And I think that's kind of interesting. And you can make an argument. You can make an argument that, yeah, well, no, both those rules were to make the game better. But at the end of the day, it's to make the game better for the people watching it. And it is interesting when rules like that are made in comparison to the big NFL rule, which was all about correcting an injustice in the game. Mm-hmm. And I just find that interesting. There is a sort of a self-awareness of we are ultimately a spectator sport.
Well, that's why, like, I mean, you know, if they didn't get totally down this path, but when you think about it, if that really has the level of success, the money that's in it, all the things that flow out of that, like
it's one of the best rule changes ever made.
Right, like so anyway, I recommend that podcast.
And I would put that along with adding a shot clock to basketball.
Yeah.
Because watching a basketball game without a shot clock, as I've said, now, true, you know, I'm not suggesting anyone goes to watch U14 basketball for entertainment,
mm-hmm.
but having a shot clock and keeping the thing moving, yeah.
So on the other hand, as a Virginia fan, whether they make these moves to like shorten the shot clock, we're generally opposed. Although the coach actually basically, because we're known for being this defensive, slow-paced team, the coach basically said, do whatever you want. I mean, like if you shorten the shot clock, I play defense, now only have to do it for 20 seconds instead of 30-some-odd seconds, and we'll just do better with it.
Staying with sports, for people who don't, or staying with soccer specifically, the 2022 World Cup, very controversially, is going to be in, is it
Qatar? Or
Qatar.
Qatar.
Qatar, some people call it Qatar, and I'm like, yeah, no, it's Qatar.
We're going to go with Qatar.
It's in Qatar. And it's already been very controversial for a number of reasons, including construction workers dying, and the whole thing was fixed. But the biggest reason is the World Cup, like the Summer Olympics, is traditionally in the summer. Because it is so hot in, what did we decide? Qatar? Is that what we just decided?
Qatar.
Because it is so hot in Qatar, and my partner is going to quote some of these numbers shortly, the thing has been moved to the winter season.
Not only is it hot, but they've got like a global warming. So there's an article in the Washington Post talking about how, like, in particular in the city areas, they've had higher than the rest of the world in terms of increase in temperatures, to the point where it's basically like 110 degrees.
You're already in
plus.
The desert, though, aren't you?
Well,
if I live in Antarctic, I don't want to hear that it's really, really snowy. I'm already freezing anyway.
Yeah, but it's
right.
It basically never gets below 90 at night. It was 116 degrees outside of the stadium on this random day they picked to go there. And so the article is not really about it's not only about the soccer, it's about the fact that they're basically air conditioning the outdoors.
Yes.
Like, so stores, restaurants, you know, you'd be sitting outside and they just have a bank of like air conditioners blowing cool air on you. And then there's a whole other part where it's like, okay, you're blowing the cool air on everybody, using a bunch of electricity, creating this global warming. It's all sort of circular. But even the environmentalists are like, listen, you know, you have to live. I mean, you can't exist.
It's true. There may be controversy over all kinds of construction workers dying in constructing the World Cup stadiums for Qatar, but it's going to be even worse when players and people watching the exciting spectacle where the ball can't be picked up when it's hit back to you. You don't want those people dying either.
Well, so apparently they've set up like in the stadiums, and of course they've spent untold amounts on these stadiums. They have basically air conditioning vents under all the seats.
Right.
And, you know, the big revelation here is the guy basically says, you know, he's trying to come up with a design for the air conditioning and realized, I really just sort of need to coat the inner surface of the place with air conditioning. You know, I don't need to air condition the whole top, the open area, as he says. I don't need to air condition the birds, right?
That's true.
So, and since cold air sinks, generally speaking, if you set it up, their theory at least, as we'll see how this pans out, is you basically have like a little bit of cool air coming in under all the seats, and it will just sort of roll down to the bottom, and everybody in the players will be in cooler air, and, you know, the fans will be in decently cooler. I guess you could, if you really need it, you could stick your hands down by the vents and stuff. So
it does lead to the question, why didn't they just build domes?
I don't understand.
There's so much technology now. Like, for example,
You could build opening closeable domes. I mean, if they got this much money, you could do these things where you could have real grass, you could close it.
Yeah.
You could have, you know, transparent ones, although it probably even gets hotter, right? Because you just catch all the heat.
The NFL the NFL season is on right now, and they currently have those Sunday games from London. And they're using Tottenham Hotspur's new stadium, which was built last year, which apparently is a Wembley. It was a very impressive edifice. Tottenham Hotspur, obviously a Premier League soccer team, they play on grass. But what they have is the stadium has been designed that I think they roll in
like different types.
I think it's actually, you know, modern plastic, artificial turf, but that's rolled in over the grass.
Right, right.
So you have two pitches within the one stadium. So I don't understand why. I know, you know, FIFA are very big that the World Cup should be played on grass.
Have
it where you roll it in under the dome. Well, I think that seems...
There's a stadium somewhere in the United States where it's grass on a big thing that slides out of the stadium and it can
and
grow.
And then grow outside. Then you bring it inside under the roof. That's why I don't understand. This seems, in a strange way... Now, I appreciate the part of the conversation which I think is more interesting. Isn't that they're doing it for sports, but the fact that in Qatar and these other very hot areas, they are attempting to air condition in the outside for regular living. But if you just narrowed it down to a sports thing, well, you should have just built a dome. Yeah. It all seems slightly excessive.
I mean, maybe it's one of those FIFA things where they're like, we don't have domes.
So what you're saying is, to follow up on the non-sports of it, if I'm going to my local Starbucks down at, you know, Akbali High Street, I can sit outside and air conditioning is going to be blowing on me?
Apparently.
Is that what they're looking to do?
You know, who knows how much it does. If it's 116 degrees out, does it knock it down to 95?
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of pictures of people being out. And I guess, you know, I don't think they have the siesta tradition.
It's the desert. So it's supposed to feel that bad anyway, right?
True. Yeah. In any event, it seems largely unpleasant.
That's Bill Paxton's great line from Aliens.
I mean, also,
hey man, it's really hot down here. Yeah, but it's a dry heat before the Marines get jumped by the aliens.
Oh.
Bill Paxton has all the great, the dearly departed Bill Paxton has all the great lines in that movie.
He has a lot of great lines in a lot of movies.
Yeah, he is. He was
game over, man.
Game it's again from Aliens.
Yeah.
No way, man. I ain't going out there.
Or whatever it was in the...
So I just find that I find it interesting, and it's weird. It's the irony of ironies that you are probably adding to the notion of global warming.
Well, and they claim the article gets into a whole other area. This is one of those Washington Post articles where they're doing a whole series on different environmental issues, and there's a whole environmental sport thing. But it's one of these, like, technologically, when you go to the website, it's not like done like their regular articles. It's done with these sort of interesting scrolling pictures and like this sort of multimedia type content so that you can, you know, really scrutinize all this stuff. And it's kind of interesting. But what I was about to say is that they're apparently – it's supposed to end up being carbon neutral. Because
how?
That's
the thing.
You buy offsetting credits of like basically funding other things that are better. The one thing they did comment, which is probably right, is because it's small, all the stadiums are nearby. Like there's none of this like, you know, United States, they had to jet back and forth from the West Coast to the East Coast. And even in like Russia, you know, it was heavily like that in Brazil. You know, you had these stadiums in Brazil that were basically in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, because I remember England played their first game right up the Amazon, and it was it's super
humid. Here it's like just bus trip from everywhere.
Yeah.
Now, they did mention, like, okay, they can air condition the outside, but they're not quite sure how it's going to be for people getting from game to game and how that's going to go. But it's in November. Like, they moved it off of the summer because they realized it was going to be just too hot.
Yeah.
And so now it'll just be mostly hot.
Mostly hot.
But there's a seasonality piece to that that will segue into the next thing you wanted to talk about. I had meant for this the seasonality segue to go the other direction, but we'll have it go this way.
Do you want to go the other direction?
The other direction. In other words, you wanted to talk about the seasonality of a sport.
All right. So, we did promise we were gonna celebrate the World Series coming to Washington, D.C. Yep. But my first question as a foreigner, even though I am now American, is why does a sport that takes place in the summer have its big showpiece occasion where everyone in the crowd is going to be wearing gloves and hooded sweatshirts, especially if the Nats end up playing the Yankees, where I watched the Yankees game the other night and it looked freezing up there.
Yeah.
Explain that to me.
Well, I don't know how to explain that.
Okay.
So. I mean, you know.
Do Houston have a dome? Are they in a dome? They used to be way back in the day because they were the Astrodome.
Yeah, they're not there, obviously.
They're not there anymore. But isn't their ballpark one with like a removable roof or something like that?
Maybe they have air conditioning in the seats.
Yeah.
They've announced all the game times too for the World Series. So for people to know, like where we are right now, the Washington Nationals are in the World Series.
Yay!
But the series,
well, no, because I'm going to actually comment now on this.
I think it has a retractable roof.
It's well, there you go.
Park.
Yeah. All right. So in a strange way,
the other side is not settled. So the Houston Astros and the Yankees are still in their their American League Championship.
Although this
series
will be resolved by the time that the show airs, we will know who the Washington Astros opponent is.
In fact, the World Series starts on Tuesday.
Will have started by the time you hear this.
Wednesday.
No, I think it starts
Tuesday. Tuesday, yeah. Wednesday, and whatever.
Because I will release this show as I'm sitting watching.
Very conveniently, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or
you have tickets to the World Series.
I have two of the games.
Boom!
So,
look at you. It's
three
like
games
going to the
in
Super
DC. So it's two away. Three. We already know that the American League team's going to have home field advantage, so it'll get four games, and the Nationals get three.
So is it 2-3-2 or is it 2-2-1-1-1?
No, it's 2-3-2.
Hate that.
Well,
hate that. I'm glad the NBA switched.
It reduces the travel time and all that.
So? Why they have regular
Listen,
jobs?
If it was
these are not wives.
The Nationals
these are
would
the
be
celebrities.
Much better off because then you could just only use our starters. So the three games here very conveniently are Friday, Saturday, Sunday next week.
Oh, yeah.
So
so which games do you have tickets to?
Saturday, and assuming it's needed, Sunday will be game five. So unless there's a sweep by one of the teams.
But you'll still see the World Series.
Yeah, which is weird. Like, so as a starting point, it is a very surreal experience, not just because we've had a share of season tickets since the Nationals got here in 2005, but
I do want to comment
the
on
World
this.
Series is like a – it's something out there. It's like if you were going to go to – I don't know. I'm trying to think of like be in a movie. You know, like it's something that's out there elsewhere, and the idea that you're going to go to the World Series games, it's just something I've only watched on TV. Even when I've had teams that I've been a fan of going,
I would
I've
equate
never
this
had
to
it,
England getting to the World Cup final,
right? And then you end up being there.
Yeah.
I mean, the nice part is because there's seven games, or at least three home games, there's more tickets to go around, but it's not that big a stadium to begin with. It's 47,000, maybe the.
And I want to now say this, and this speaks a little bit to baseball. I have a separate thing now where I'm going to go off about being about bandwagon jumpers, but I'm going to come remind me to come back to that because I'm going to put the boot into some people with that. The Super Bowl is clearly the singular biggest sports event in American culture. It's mammoth. Everyone watches it. It's but there is something for me as someone who enjoys sort of the history of sports. There is something about the World Series that speaks to me more than the Super Bowl as that old classic word, Americana. The World Series.
Yeah.
Like you can, do you know what I mean? No. What I mean is I can easily envision, men in suits and caps in the 1920s grabbing their peanuts and going down to game five of the World Series.
Right.
Whereas the Super Bowl feels like a very modern, commercial. There is something about the World Series that sort of just speaks to
and the last
history.
Time and well that and I'm looking at a bunch of that lately because
and to be fair, I don't know
articles.
Who won it last year, but no matter, you know, you're in the World Series, so you're suddenly part of
the last time history. The Washington team, which of course was a different team because they went away twice and then arrived back, but the was in I forget 1930. It's been 80 some odd years since they're there, so as a result, there's a lot of on various articles. I mean, the Post is running like 10 articles a day on something related to the World Series.
Yeah.
And there's all these pictures of the old-timey stadium, Griffith Stadium. Which
the World Series. Robert Redford in the Natural is the World Series, even though it actually isn't the World Series. That's just the Championship Series.
Right,
that's what I'm saying. I mean that, and I mean that deadly seriously. It conjures up all these terrific images of sports history.
Right,
whereas the Super Bowl doesn't do that.
The Super Bowl still, the best you had was, basically late 60s with Namath making it a big deal. And,
right.
You know,
but it still feels like the same
It still
kind
feels
of thing.
Modern.
Yes,
like here it's
exactly.
Like, that's what I mean. Like, I don't have the right analogy. That's why it's like you're going to participate in something that's fictional. Like,
yeah,
it's like imaginary.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's funny because I was having this discussion with my father-in-law last night, and he was talking about the fact that obviously the baseball had a, like everyone is doing it now, they're moving regular season games overseas. And they played, the Red Sox and the Yankees played I think they played a, they played back-to-back games in London, and of course within, I think it was in the Olympic Stadium that we'd been to, because of the dimensions, the game was something like 21 to 14 or something ridiculous. But then he was telling me last night that apparently next year they are building a Field of Dreams in the Midwest.
Oh, yes.
And they're going to play the White Sox against the Yankees for real, but only like, so yeah. And I'm like, but it is interesting that that baseball, you know, I remember for the longest time, the NFL used to do like retro uniform month and teams wore, but at the end of the day, because of football, it just kind of looks the same. Yeah. Whereas if you do a retro thing for baseball, you are transporting everyone.
Yeah. Other than the fact that you wear helmets now for batting, but yeah, other than that, like they can wear the hats.
You can wear the baggy
the
pants.
Pittsburgh Pirates used to have these pillbox hats. Yeah. And they've been wearing, they wore those a couple of times this year. And
so being in the World Series, I'm like, I get it. Obviously the team have a shot at being the champion. That's great. And I will go on the record right now. If you listen to our show from March when I shared how I went to opening day this year and the Nats lost on opening day, and I think I remember saying on the show, I can't really remember what happened, but this new manager, he's probably going to be the first one to get fired. 9 months later, what do I know about baseball? Because they're in the World Series.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, listen, we all thought, because they were 19-31 at one point.
So at the time, I wasn't being outlandish when I said this is the first guy to get bad.
And even recently, I was like, I can't imagine them getting through the rounds. We went to the, so myself and the other member of the household went to the wild card game. So like, for people who don't know, the playoffs, there's, before you get into the like multiple game series, they now have this single game elimination between the two teams.
Truly idiotic. Just outside. Yeah, truly idiotic.
And it's very random. And the Nats were losing.
It's like having a penalty shootout with just one penalty.
Oh, I forget what it was, the eighth inning, whatever.
They were losing. Yeah.
And this big time comeback, Ryan Zimmerman, UVA guys involved in it. Juan Soto, who's their young player, he's only 20 years old, like basically knocks the runs in, and the crowd was insane. Like, I mean, like, just we've had quite a few collapses, and so to be in this position where like, oh my goodness, we go the whole year, one game, we're going to lose it, and we're not going to come up big, to suddenly be on the other side of that coin, it was against the Brewers. That was like unbelievable, like, you know, just people screaming and yelling. And then
do you remember the first time as a sports fan you hugged a stranger in joy?
Oh, I'm sure it was in college, and you know, there's a lot of drinking in the stands.
Okay, I'm just wondering if you, because I remember the first time I did.
Wasn't pre that. I would have never been to a big enough sporting event before college that I would have had occasion to do that, you know.
Look, like complete strangers, the dude games, standing like next that, to you. Right, yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah.
Nowadays, I do remember it's more the time high fives. I don't think there's as much hugging of random people next to you. I think it's just a lot of high fives around the crowd.
And I've had a dude rubbing my head, a complete stranger, from the seat behind. I have no idea what I
it's good luck,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But so we went to that game. Pets and then after that was the National League Divisional Series against the Dodgers, in which the Dodgers were up 2-1, and the Nats had to rip off two wins in a row. We went to the game four.
Right.
That got them to go back to the last game was in LA, and that was amazing. Like, that one wasn't here, so we couldn't all participate in it, but it was another huge comeback, grand slam winner in the 10th inning, you know, the whole bit, like all the great drama. Then we went to one of the National League Championship Series games, the one that clinched. And this one, the Nats swept the Cardinals, so it was a different, like, people were very excited about it, but it wasn't that feeling of like, oh my goodness, we're going to lose. Oh my God, we're going to win, you know, kind of thing. It was much more like, okay, we're winning. We're already up 3-0. Like, there's three more games just to win one more game, you know, or four more games to win one more game. So it was kind of expected, and yet there was a moment in the game where it looked like we might collapse again, and then they did win. And we were actually in that game, we were sitting right behind the bullpen. And for, again, people who don't know, that's where the pitchers warm up. It's different places in different parks. In Nationals Park, it's over in right field. It's an unusual seat, and I think this is why it's available. And I'll talk about like getting seats for all these games in a second.
Yeah.
But we were just two rows behind the bullpen, but the bullpen's very deep. And so we were two rows behind the bullpen, but we couldn't see in the bullpen. So you could, like,
so you didn't know it was going. So it's a shame, isn't it? You're like, right next like to the bullpen.
Texting me to say, oh, you know, are we warming somebody up? And I'm like, I don't know. I got to get up and walk around the corner to look down into the bullpen to figure it out. I actually had somebody tell me because they saw it on a TV screen as to who was warming up. But
frankly, if you walk down to have a look, you might end up warming up yourself.
Note, and we have one of the World Series games, we have the same seats.
Okay.
weird thing that I never really knew goes on in the bullpen is there's a lot of unusual fan interaction with the people in the bullpen.
Oh, really?
Like, a lot of people come walking up there to where you can see it's sort of on the side, and they're looking down there. They ask people to throw them up a ball. There was somebody early on who was clearly having a conversation with, like, it was a woman who was having a conversation with someone in the bullpen, as if to say, hey, what are we doing later? You know, like, or something. It was very strange. And I think, because the bullpen, in addition to the pitchers who might come in, has a lot of staff, I'm going to guess that this person was not talking to a potential relief pitcher, but rather somebody who was working down in the bullpen.
Yeah.
But the people, and as the game got later and later, more people are coming there. And the other shocking thing was the pitchers look up. Like, if I have to come into a game as a relief pitcher, I'm not paying any attention to these people who are like 25 feet in the air who are looking down at me doing this stuff. They're constantly looking up and sort of making eye contact with people. And I'm like, that's very weird.
Well, it's because that's the home team as well.
Can yeah, I say yes, this? But this and, is the, and then everybody went at the end of the game, the most excited because we were, and I have a little video of it. Because all the pitchers are out there, one of the big things when you win the game like that is they open the gates and all the pitchers come running forward to like jump up and down in the middle of the field.
Talking of baseball constantly sort of evoking history, I hope this is a tradition that does not change, and I'm surprised it hasn't. The notion that the manager in someone in the dugout still goes to a regular landline to call a bullpen. And I love it on TV. I always love that on TV.
Do you think they should get out their cell phone?
No, I do. Well, I'm surprised
they
that they don't.
At least.
Yeah, but I love the fact that the TV always shows the shot of some guy talking into a regular phone, and you see the guy in the bullpen answering the phone. There's something very 1970s odd couple-ish
about it. I've noticed lately, and like, maybe there before, and I didn't notice it, but behind the bench where all the players are, there's at least three or four different computer screens all showing pieces of the game, or maybe it's video from earlier in the game.
Yeah.
Like, so they can go right there and do some study of things. You know, there's and a yet lot they're going, a lot more going on in the dugout.
And yet they're grabbing a landline. I love that. Yeah. You're right. They could easily text or send Barry an email over there in the dump. Exactly. But no, they pick it up. It's almost like they're doing it for TV.
Yeah.
Because TV loves that shot.
Yeah.
And it tends to be a white.
TV's in like a little box, you know, like a fire.
And it tends to be always like a white courtesy phone.
Yeah.
It's always a white one.
There's no dial on it. I don't think it only rings one place.
Well, the last thing you do is want to pick up the phone at a bullpen and you get the local Chinese restaurant by accident. And that's probably we don't want to do that. Ghana, before you hit me with your facts about the tickets, I want to put the boot into my wife. I'm excited for the World Series. I'm excited from a more historical perspective. I've been to four or five Nats games this year. I always go whenever you invite me to go. I want the Nats to win, but my relationship with the Nats is not, I want them to win, but if they lose, it's not the end. I don't care. It's not like my relationship with Arsenal Football Club, where if they lose, stuff's getting turned over. The dog's probably going to get a boot. My wife, but during the season, if there's nothing on, I will have the Nats on.
Mm-hmm.
My wife, during the season, will go, isn't there anything else on? But now that the playoffs are on, she's sitting there at every game going, he should do this and he should do that. And I have found myself, because I don't want to endorse that sort of casual fandom, I've actually walked away from the TV. And I'm now being accused of not being a fan. And I'm trying to make the point that I've been a fan all season. You don't get to show up in the playoffs, turn on the TV, and start making comments about things. I've got the notion when teams in municipalities do well, I really struggle with these Johnny-come-lately fans.
You know,
and I'm only an occasional fan in that.
Right.
Like, it doesn't upset me if they lose, but I want them to do well. And again, I've been to more games this year than ever before. And if I'm just sitting around in the afternoon with nothing on, I'll leave the game on while I'm on a computer, just so I can see what they're doing.
Right, right.
But now,
and that's what baseball's perfect for. I mean, that's the thing, is you can just kind of.
And this is the worst thing about success, is the kind of interloper who starts clinging on.
I don't think I'm bothered by it. I mean, and I've
thought
about this.
It's one thing for the Post to do loads of things about it because it's the city's team. It's one thing, and now you're going to talk about getting tickets. I have no problem. Sure, a stadium that holds 45,000 people is going to have their. There's got to be thousands of fans who have been to a dozen or more games this year who aren't going to get to see a game. I've just got a problem. Like, I'm angry now that I'm sure that when game three begins, at least 5% of the crowd will be at their first baseball game this year. And I hate that about sports in general. I hate that.
Well, this will dovetail into the seats thing because I, for whatever reason, I thought
you've
about
got
this.
Season tickets.
Yeah, yeah. We'll share of them, you know, like right. a bunch of people. So, we've had them since they came yeah, here yes. at the old stadium, 100 lost teams for years.
Yes.
And I thought about it because I said, you know, like every place the baseball teams win a World Series, you get a bunch of bandwagon fans who jump
yeah,
on.
Yes.
But really, that tends to be more after the fact. Like, I think everybody, when you're in the midst of the thing, the more the merrier. I don't mind at all. I mean, none of those people should then accuse other people of not being fans,
yes.
but I'm totally happy with it. I was just clicking on the computer to look something up. There's a viral video out there. They call it the Since Today guy.
Okay.
And so, like, in the course of the win, the clinching win, this guy who's on video, and, you know, they got the I forget what channel was, like, broadcasting from outside the stadium or maybe leaving the stadium, and people are like, yeah, ooh, it's so great, we won, blah, blah. And the interviewer is asking, like, oh, how long have you been a fan of the team? And the guy goes, since today.
Yeah,
it's the honesty of that, like, basically him yeah. saying, I am here, I don't like, and then there's a longer version of the interview where he just doesn't even understand baseball. Like, he like yeah. doesn't know how it's played. He's like,
yeah. yeah.
And apparently he was sitting, like, right behind home plate with all the food options and
I've
things like that.
I've got a problem with that.
I mean, if it impedes with my fandom, sure, but it doesn't. I don't think it ever will. The only thing is, you know, the demand for tickets is going to go up and they'll get more expensive, which is what segues into the whole thing. Like, and I actually dislike that more from teams I don't care about. Like, so, you know, they also, the joke for
so
a while.
So, like, when the Cubs win.
Well, the joke for a while in the Red Sox, because the Red Sox were
the Red Sox.
Forever. Now they're good, but, you know, but they were horrible for a long time. And then, and they also were, you know, exercise in futility a lot of years where they kind of fell short. Was the pink hats, was, you know, when, sorry, it's mostly women or girls would start showing up with, like, the Red Sox hat, and it would be pink instead because it was better for the attire at the time.
Right.
And those folks would seem like they all jumped out. Atlanta had a ton of this. When Atlanta was good in the early 90s, you would go down there. And there were so many people who were just, like, on that bandwagon.
Yeah.
Had no idea what was going on beforehand yeah. or were fans. And the Braves, like, they have so many badly attended games even now.
Yes.
That like, it's people are on and off there. So I tend to be more annoyed by those folks at the other teams. I'm already, like, I really don't like the other teams.
Okay.
And so now if you're a bandwagon, if you're a bandwagon on my team, that's fine. I know I've spent more time with the team. I mean, like, when Arsenal has had ebbs and flows, there must be people who jump on the bandwagon there, and you haven't, do you begrudge them their Arsenal fandom, or you feel like, well, that's fine. Come along. You know, I'll tell
yeah,
you
I guess,
the right way to be a fan.
I guess. Yeah. I mean, there is something, though. So you've said yourself, you guys have had season tickets since you've been in on season tickets since the start. You've seen 100 lost seasons. There is something about fandom where, you know, I asked you earlier, do you remember the first time you hugged a stranger in joy because your team was doing well? But there is also that sort of community of losing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I remember the first time you walked out of a stadium and nine strangers are all in agreement that Eric is a bum, and I don't know why he keeps getting played on the left.
Yeah.
There is a strange, there is a communism in losing. I still remember, so I had, and my other team is Georgetown Ohio Basketball, and I've sat in the same section for 15 years. And every time, I could move here, I could move there, but I like my seats. But I like my seats from a purely physical standpoint, but also like the fact that every season, there are like 20 different people who I know by face and not by name. And I remember a couple of years ago when we were right before John Thompson III got canned, the season came to an end with another moronic loss and they were like 12-19. And I remember somebody said, yep, the long national nightmare is finally over and everyone's laughing. And there is the communal aspect of being a fan to me isn't so much in hugging a stranger when you win. It is in the fact that,
yeah,
I can identify with nine other dudes who all right now are feeling exactly the same way I am, and it's not good. And so my issue with bandwagon jumpers is it's not that you don't get to be happy, but you do have to pay that. Happiness comes at paying the bill for being miserable. And for you, if they win the World Series, You can remember sitting there when they were 30 and 120.
They didn't even have an owner yet. They came and they like working at trailers in the parking lot.
Yeah, and so that is my issue with bandwagon jumpers, is that actually you need to pay a bill to feel that good. Yeah.
So, you know, you just mentioned something, and I'm going to go ahead and tell a story, although it may not reflect that well on me, that this year when –
Although, can I quote Spike Guest Cameron back at you? You're the same guy who didn't care about the U.S. national team in soccer, and you're American. I care more about him than you do, and I've just become an American. I'm a bandwagon jumper to
since
America.
Since they lost to Canada this week, I've more or less given up on them. But, in fact, talk about, like we talked about, sports fandom. So one of the games, the Nationals games against the Dodgers, was the same time as a UVA game against Miami. It's on a Friday night, and I went with a couple of buddies who like both teams. We're watching on a bar, and UVA was not doing well. But I at that time, I basically, if I was willing to tell the karma, the sports karma gods,
I'll take this loss for
absolutely.
That win.
I will take a lot of UVA losses in football this year for like a lot of UVA of Nationals wins. I'm happy to do that. I'm you know. I've had enough losses. We're on a cusp of something in the Nationals, so I'm willing to go with that. But anyway, back to my story that I and these are the fans that actually annoy me more, is a fan who styles themselves as a big time fan of a team, and yet when things are going badly, which we all know sucks for us,
yes,
starts laying the blame on things that are just not really fair to lay the blame on. You know, whether sometimes it is different players' fault, sometimes it's not their fault, and you should know enough about the players to know what the situation is. So there's this area in Nationals Park, like there's a lot of standing room only tickets,
yes,
like around or places to stand.
There's one
over on area on the third base line. It's right in front of this bar. It's a great spot to watch the game from if you can get this railing spot. And I've noticed we've been there occasionally. We'll go there. We'll meet some people who are like in different seats. And there's a certain people that are there almost all the time.
Right.
So I'm going to guess they just bought standing room tickets. In fact, the Nationals offered basically like a Netflix pass to games.
Oh, really?
Where you could pay like $60 a month to not have a seat. Like, so you can come to all the games.
But you just don't get to sit
down. You just don't have a seat.
I would take that.
Exactly.
Great. Yeah.
And especially in like regular season games, there's enough empty seats that you could probably just take a seat anyway. But, so there's a bunch of people there. And this was a game in which Sean Doolittle, who's a UVA guy and a closer who's not the greatest closer in the world. He's a really interesting character. If anybody wants to follow him, he keeps showing up in these post game videos with the lightsaber. He's a big like Jedi. Like they did a bobblehead of him where he was a Jedi with a sword, Doolittle, Obi-Wan Doolittle or something like that. But he's had some moments where like, okay, it's as dicey as gonna, and he just melted down in this one game, and they're just multiple home runs off them. They lose the game. It goes off into extra innings. But this guy is like yelling about what a bum this guy is. And I'm like, everybody knows the Nationals. Their bullpen is held together with like duct tape and shoe strings.
Yeah.
And this guy has like way pitched more innings than he ever has in his life. He's completely exhausted. He ends up going on the injured reserve afterwards. I don't know if that was mental or physical or whatever it was, but he's like yelling at this guy being a bum. And I was like, shut up. You're an idiot. Like, that's fine. I mean, it does suck, but there's no chance you can blame this guy for being, he is being put into a position where he cannot possibly keep up. If you want to blame somebody, the manager, for overusing the guy, you know, now we're all rosy and happy now that it's going into the World Series. But that fan annoys me more than a bandwagon person, because it doesn't seem to be like cognizant of what the team really is.
Well, I think it comes back to my feeling about failure, in that you have to experience failure. And again, if I've watched Arsenal suck, then yeah, you know something, I have the right to criticize so-and-so. But if you've just walked in the room
and you
go so-and-so, so-and-so again.
He may not be a regular fan, but
I'm like, in my mind I'm thinking you are correct, but you actually don't get to say
I was primed.
I get to say
one problem is I was primed by the fact that before that guy was there was a bunch of other people who were very bandwagon-y fans. Like, they were like overdressed and they had taken apart by the rail, and they were, so maybe I do have some things against bandwagon-y
fans. Yeah, thank you.
They weren't paying any attention to the game at all. They were just sort of hanging out because this was a place to drink. And I'm like, you're taking up valuable space and you're just blathering on about stuff and like, you know,
yeah,
drinking a bunch of Truly seltzers.
Yeah. Yeah, that alone was a clue.
So that, and so then the seats. So the other thing that mention and talk about demand, and this is the other bad part. So our season tickets are, our regular season tickets are pretty good. They're like club level, but they're not like down in front, you know.
No, but they're good seats though.
Yeah, yeah, good seats, and you get like a,
I like being entrance. Up at sports
yeah, yeah,
events.
It's like mezzanine level. And yeah, it's got an overhang, so when it rains, you gotta run away, kind of thing. They're not cheap. I mean, you got to do a discount when you, I forget what the right figure is for what they are, but let's call them $50 a game or something like that. So with each one of these rounds, the price goes up on all these tickets.
Yeah.
So now, like for us to buy our own season tickets, it's like $350 for the World Series for each ticket. And then like the tickets in the rest of the stadium. So like this whole exercise of getting extra tickets, we get access to more tickets each time for being season ticket holders. So I don't have any seats in those actual seats.
Yeah.
I've got the seats in the bullpen. In another game, I got seats up in the 300 section. All of these are like 300, but a decent deal. So we went online. So they had a pre-sale for people who had bought tickets for the prior round. You had an opportunity to get into a pre-sale yesterday at 10 in the morning. You go online, and it's like buying concert tickets.
I hit a website,
and it was
crashed.
A meltdown. Was like when I just searched for the since today, the second thing is Nats fans fume over botched World Series presale because nobody got a ticket through. I don't know what presale was, but I know of not a single person who actually either you couldn't even get through to the website or you never got a ticket. And even when you go there with show tickets and you'd be like, okay, I'd like one ticket. No, we don't have one ticket available. I'm like, why is this website running? And standing room, like for this sale, I briefly, like, again, these tickets were not really available, but it briefly said there were these outfield tickets available for $550 each. The standing room only tickets were $375 or something like that to stand in a game. And I'm like, okay, now that's gone too far.
You know the worst bandwagon jumpers are the teams themselves because yeah, they're jumping right on their own bandwagon by fleecing the fans.
Yeah, so
it's interesting because back in England, traditionally, when soccer teams, you know, make big finals or have one-off events, teams all have sort of variations of a theme. Obviously, season ticket holders, proof of going to games, but also in the UK, obviously smaller country and you can travel, you can also, if you've traveled to so many away games by the team system.
Points,
so there are ways of sort of...
Colleges
sort
do of, that now.
Yeah,
their,
there are
the
ways of...
Who, like when you have limited attendance like basketball games, you get credit for going to other sports that maybe they want to have...
There are ways of rewarding loyalty, but I also understand nowadays that, yeah... So
those prices go up. The parking price, so these parking lots that would normally cost you like $25 are now up to $60-$70, and you know, you can reserve a lot of that stuff online ahead of time, and so there's a big rush on those things. I don't think, because these are weekend games, I'm going to try to get there some other way, because forget about the price for parking. When we went to the NLCS game, it was like an hour to get to the parking lot and then an hour to get out of the parking lot. So now I'm like, I'll just walk back to my office or something like that. But that part was like egregious. But you know, I was thinking what they haven't done yet is raise the price of the concessions. They're already expensive. I mean, I think that would be like if literally the beer prices went up $2 or $3 for, I mean, really, you could multiply it by two.
You
if
could
you're
do that.
Keep up
but
with
I,
the
think,
ticket prices.
I think that's one of those huge moments where you are clearly fleecing people.
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
so again, as someone who actually takes pride, you know, I'm a fan, but also like rooting against people. There's a part of me that actually wants to root against the Nats, knowing that they're trying to fleece my buddy out of his cash.
I'm now caught in a quandary. Yeah, you'll ruin my day if that happens. So, yeah, so we'll be going to the...
Considering I was wrong with my this is the first manager to get fired prediction, I'm actually not going to make any predictions about the World Series, for the good of the game.
They won't be favored. I mean, that's for sure, because the other teams would be definitely considered to be better.
I do tend to be one of those people who believes in like sports karma. And I do get this sense when they won that stupid wild card playoff play-in game, whatever. So stupid, yeah. I think stupid. The manner in they won that, I said, oh no,
it's definitely a bit of a momentum.
Their name is on the trophy, I think, is
the big thing. That's a problem is that they finished their series up when they won those four games, and they have a 6-day rest before they start the World Series, whereas the other team's only going to have a couple days rest. And apparently, like out of the past, I don't know,
my sports take
years,
is the rest. Like, conventional wisdom is the rest is a good thing, but in a strange way, in baseball, it's not a good thing.
They've almost universally lost.
They've lost their ability to hit runs
after the extra weight. But
there's your one sports take. So you're excited? Are you a little kid fan excited?
What's that?
Your little kid fan excited.
Yeah. I mean,
you know when you're little and your team's in a big game?
Like, for whatever reason, and maybe it's because of the vestiges of being American.
It's the World Series.
Right. But I do think, like, a lot of people are already looking like it's gravy. Like, just getting to the World Series, given the two leagues and things.
That's bandwagon fans. Isn't it great we just got to the final?
I think what will change it is how the games go. Right? Like, if you, and so many of these games come down to some like one mistake or something like that, or if you feel like the team isn't doing its best, you know, then that guy's going to be yelling at Doolittle again.
I want to shout out, because we've talked about the Nationals. My partner has talked about how you make those sort of comic deals. And obviously, as an Arsenal fan, one of the most famous soccer books is Nick Hornby's Feed the Pitch, and he talks about how he charted the rise and fall in his life with Arsenal having a good team again. And he was the one who said, I went for a job interview 2 days before the big game, and I was ready. I did the deal. I don't want the job if right. Arsenal get to win. Yeah, and it is amazing. So do you have – so, Naimi, do you have one tradition – that you're going to make sure you do, like, is it a lucky hat, or
I'm
going to wear this?
I'm not wearing a hat. So I've not, okay,
but that's
hat.
What I want to know what you think.
I forgot my hat for the wild card game, so I've been like, well, I can't wear a hat again. And I've been wearing the same, like, I got these National socks for Christmas last year.
Okay.
So I've been wearing those.
There you go.
And
good.
And somebody was like, oh, are they, and I'm like, no, I wash them between it, but there was a problem, like, this time there'll be two games in a row. So I may, if it works on that one game, I'm probably going to have to wash them and wear them again the next day.
Okay.
But other than that.
Also, don't sleep with Kim Basinger, because that's what messed Robert Redford up. Right. But luckily, the little kid had done a bat for him. So they're right at the end there. Remember, his bat is broken.
Yeah, and he says
to the little bat boy, pick me a winner, son.
Yeah.
And he gives him his bat, like Big Boy or something, and he hammers it into the lights.
Well, it's a lightning.
And the music starts.
Whatever
the
heck it was.
Lightning was his.
Yeah.
But it breaks,
yeah.
And then he turns to the Bat Boy, and Bat Boy has made one. It's called like Big Man or something.
Yeah, that part of the movie isn't realistic. The rest of it is, though.
Okay, if you say so.
Because that bat was probably, you know, some kid makes
his own
bat.
Yes, he called
to
bat.
That's not an ideal bat.
And actually, a great book. If you ever get a chance, actually read The Natural by Berlin Malamud. It's a great piece of American literature from back then. It's a fabulous book.
All right, then.
All right, so there is your fans and World Series. And sports, also, and don't forget, also a podcast feud that we're starting with a couple of different people.
Just gonna pick some
pipes. Pieces of Grit, 99 Invisible, we're coming for you.
Yeah.
This has been the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at Libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at AtlanticVoice.net. Email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for The Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.